Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, June 14th. I'm Ray Graff. Whether it's red or white, sweet or dry, wine has been produced and enjoyed for thousands of years. The production process is extremely complex with various varieties of grapes from all over the world with different variations based on the biochemical development of the grape. And some wines don't even use grapes, instead relying on plums, cherries, and currants. Here to discuss the wide world of wine are Michael Drapkin of the Kingston Wine Company and food writer and instructor Peter Barrett. Interested in learning more about wine and its production process? If so, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Reds, whites, your wine calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today on the show, we discuss the complex and interesting world of wine. And in the studio, we have two guests. Michael Drapkin is the co-owner of Kingston Wine Company in Kingston, New York. He has worked on a farm in southern France and has had about a decade of experience in wine in Washington, D.C. and New York City. In addition to running his company, Michael enjoys educating others about the time-honored approach to making agricultural products by hand. Also joining us today, Peter Barrett. He has been a food writer in the Hudson Valley for more than a decade and runs the podcast CookPod and the Instagram account @CookBlog. He grows, preserves, and cooks as much of his own food as possible and teaches others to do the same through his writing and classes. He's been on this show a number of times. If you have a wine question today, great time to call is right now, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org is our email address. And, you know, full disclosure, I'm monitoring the emails today, and I'll do the best I can. Our producer not here this afternoon. Again, the number to call is 800-348-2551. Michael Drapkin, Peter Barrett, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Great to be back.
Great to have you guys here. And again, this is one of those many, many topics I know very little about, not really a wine drinker. So this will be educational for me, I hope, and for our listeners. First of all, before we get to the wine, Peter Barrett, what's new?
What's new? The podcast is fairly new. I started it in January to, I don't know, celebrate 10 years as a food writer.
Yeah. Is it fun?
It is. We were talking about editing before the show started.
Yeah.
So it's the ratio of talking to interesting people versus editing the show after the fact is not ideal, but that's the price you pay. It's great. I'm really enjoying it. Talking to some of the really intelligent, talented, passionate people that I've met over the last decade and meeting some new ones, and it's fun and exciting.
And one of the fun things about a podcast, of course, is you don't have a set time on it.
That's right.
When you have a broadcast, you say, well, it's too short today, it's too long, you have to figure out how to make it work. You know, podcast, if somebody's boring, you just make it a little shorter, right?
Absolutely. Well, and it's the editing is really useful for tightening things up and keeping it interesting.
Oh, good for you. Well, that's great. And what's the how do people find out about that?
Cookpod.net is the site. It's on all the podcast services wherever you get yours. And if you follow me, CookBlog on Instagram, I update every time there's a new episode. I talk all about it on there. And
what's the most recent episode?
The most recent episode is Jeff Barnes, who's the chef at the KTD Monastery above Woodstock, the Tibetan monastery.
Oh, cool.
Friend of a friend. Terrific guy. Super interesting. Before him, I was out in Seattle. Talked to a couple of people out there about baking. Two different aspects of that.
Yeah.
Before that was Mark Bittman, the legendary great food writer, cookbook author. Before that, Jeff Gordinier from Esquire.
Well, so you're traveling around doing this?
Yeah, some.
All right.
Yeah. Well, I was in Italy. I did three shows when I was there in the spring.
You better be prepared to write this off on the old taxes because the overhead. Yeah, they don't let you do that anymore. Pretty high.
Well, that's... Yeah, the new thing is it's just, if you're a freelancer, it's.
Well, I hope you can make
it's not the subject of this week's show.
I hope you can make the economic model work on the podcast.
Thank you.
Peter Barrett. Michael Drapkin, tell us about Kingston Wine Company.
So Kingston Wine Company is a shop located in downtown Kingston at 65 Broadway.
Just wine?
Our focus is mostly wine.
Yeah.
About 90% of our selection is wine that emphasizes organic, biodynamic, and natural wines.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the large majority of our selection.
Yeah.
And then we also have a selection of spirits for the home bar, amaros, digestivos, aperitivos, but our passion and our knowledge certainly is heavily weighed towards wine.
You're a wine guy.
I've been doing the wine thing for 15 years since I graduated from university. It's all I've ever wanted to do.
Did you know that when you were a kid?
No.
Mom, you know, I'm not old enough to drink, Mom, but, you know, I'm going to get into wine.
I grew up on Diet Coke and milk.
So that great combination.
Mixed together.
Yes. Wine was not part of our daily routine.
Yeah.
And so when I got to college, I had a teacher who happened to be a writer, wine writer for the local paper, and he exposed me to the multitude of things that you could approach wine. You know, there's various schools of thought in within a bottle of wine, and so I was really able to see wine as much more than just a beverage, but a way to learn about culture and language and history, et cetera.
I mean, Let's hold that thought for a minute.
Okay.
What schools of thought can be found in a bottle of wine?
Well, they're multitude.
Okay.
For example, like we were talking about before we went on the air, all the wines we brought in, most of what Michael sells are made in a very particular way. The common sort of catchword for that now is natural, even though that doesn't have any legal definition.
Right.
But it essentially means grapes that are grown organically or biodynamically, so no synthetic chemistry in the vineyards, and then minimal intervention in the cellar, so no additives. There, even an organic wine can have as many as 72 things legally added to it.
Such as?
Acid, sugar, yeast.
You need that to make a wine, right?
Animal derivatives.
Well, but things that aren't acid, sugar, and yeast that aren't native to the grapes from the vineyard.
I see.
All kinds of, for example, everything in front of us here was fermented using only the yeast that naturally grows on the grapes in the vineyard.
So, and I can give a quick elevator pitch, let's say, about these wines.
Okay.
The third story, fourth story elevator pitch is all of the wines in front of us come from grapes, which are grown organically on the vineyard.
Right.
In that vineyard, most likely, instead of a monoculture of just grapes being grown, there could be flowers, other vegetables, fruit trees. So it's a polyculture.
Beehives,
animal husbandry.
I mean, is anything wrong with any of that?
No, it's all a good thing. It's all great things.
Okay.
Because these elements of the ecosystem enrich the biodiversity
yes.
of the farm.
Okay.
So the grapes are then brought to the cellar. And as Peter was saying, the wild yeasts that grow naturally on the grapes, in the soil, in the cellar, are promoted and ignite fermentation. And then once fermentation begins, none of these wines in front of us see any additives or preserving agents.
Yeah. It's a shame the host isn't really a wine aficionado, because he won't be able to tell much of a difference. However, we press on. And let me give you the phone number. And if you're on the line, hang on. We're going to find out what wines these gentlemen brought. And then we will take a break. And then we will have some wine. And then we will hit the phones. The number is 800-348-2551. We talk wine today on Food Friday with Peter Barrett and Michael Drapkin. And so, what did we bring?
Well, the first thing that's in your glass.
Oh, splendid.
I'll let Michael describe the sort of
yes.
technique behind it, but it's called a Petnat, which is short for Petillon Naturel, which is a sparkling wine.
Mm-hmm.
But this one is from the Finger Lakes. So this is a New York wine.
Okay.
Yes, so this is made by Barry Family Cellars. As Peter was saying, the style of wine is called Petillon Naturel, which basically means naturally sparkling wine.
Yeah.
So grapes are harvested. In this case, it's the Cayuga grape variety, which is a hybrid grape variety. Grapes are harvested, brought into the cellar, fermentation begins, and before fermentation ends, the wine is put into a bottle with all of the sediment and active yeasts. It's still fermenting. The cap is put on the bottle, and the wine continues to ferment and be active inside of the bottle. CO2 is released from this fermentation inside of the bottle or continued fermentation. So when you open the bottle, this slightly natural sparkle occurs. Different from champagne, different from cava or prosecco. It's a subtle prickle that you would find
in tiny bubbles.
Yeah. Club, like, and you can see we opened this 10 minutes ago and it's still going.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's turbid. It's hazy. The wine has a texture similar to maybe even a club soda. For someone who finds cava or champagne too aggressive, this is a perfect alternative.
It's very nice.
It is.
And I love the consistency. I love the feel on the tongue, the tiny bubbles. It's really nice. Now, and we'll take a break here in just a second, Zach, the engineer. When you're fermenting this in the bottle, the cap is on.
Yes.
What is preventing it from exploding?
Nothing. It's a crown cap, like a beer.
So there could be disasters. Then.
There can be. And historically, there certainly have been, but over the past 35 years, as people are crafting their skills in natural winemaking, they're getting better at making these wines that have living organisms in them and are active, more consumer-friendly and stable.
The key is bottling it when there's enough sugar to make it fizzy and not so much that it explodes.
I love it. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Peter Barrett is here. Michael Drapkin is here. It's Wine Today on Food Friday, and we're just getting started. Phone number is 800-348-2551. More wine, more talk coming up. Vox Pop on WAMC, Food Friday. Ray Graff with you. Peter Barrett's here. Michael Drapkin is here. We talk wine today on the show, and the number once again is 800-348-2551. Before we get to the next wine, and so far you guys are batting 1,000. Elliot in Lenox has been waiting a while. Elliot, go ahead.
Ray, good to hear your voice. I have a question for your two experts.
Okay.
I'm getting a lot of emails asking me if I want to go to a wine-food pairing. And just for those who don't know what they are, it's basically a five-course meal where you have different food with the different wines. You're given a food and there's a wine that goes with it. And you do the five courses. And my problem with it is that I don't know what wine I like with what food. And the way these things are done, they sort of give you the wine with each course that you're supposed to eat. I'd much prefer to get the five wines up front that I can taste with each course so that I can find out for myself what wines I like with which course. I'm wondering if either or both of your experts think of that idea.
If it were up to me, I would buy the five wines, bring them home, and make the food that I wanted and just taste the wines. I mean, learning about wine is it's a commitment. It takes time. Opening multiple bottles at the same time is the best way to taste because you can compare things against each other that are similar or different. I would say if I were going to go to one of these events, that I would want to know who was cooking and who was choosing the wines. And if there were people whose taste I thought I agreed with, I'd give it a shot. If you really want to learn about your own taste and preference in wine, I think buying a mixed case from a good store and bringing it home and tasting it with the food that you like to eat is probably more educationally useful. But
yeah, and I'll add to that. Peter and I were discussing in the green room the concept of pairing food and wine together and how it is an incredibly intimidating philosophy, and one in which people tend to get very kind of overly analytical.
Yeah, overthink it.
And there is no, truly, the rules should be very broad. And if they're broad or broader than, the boundaries that are sometimes put up by these confined tastings, which the caller is referring to, you get to explore different tastes and flavors without the boundaries of someone telling you what you must have with a certain food. And yes, there are pairings that can highlight an emphasis in the wine or the food. But overall, in order to enjoy a pairing of food and wine, I think letting down your guard in the rigidness is
Yeah, I think that's, you know, we've had experts on this show who say, hey, it's this is subjective. If you
it
like
is.
If you like white wine with your steak, have go it. To town.
Yeah.
And I love sherry with my steak sometimes.
Mm. Yeah.
Truly. So, I mean, the rules are the ones that you create and make. And
I think food and wine ultimately, beyond obviously the necessity of eating, but food and wine should be about pleasure first and foremost. So you should do what makes you feel good, what makes you happy. For example, the wine, the second wine here, watch, how was that for a segue?
Well, yeah, we still have Elliot on the line, though.
I know
he
we
can't
do, but
have
Elliot,
a drink
my
of
example,
this, so.
My
just,
example.
Just,
for,
one,
yeah, please.
Just one final observation, and then I hang up and listen to you. I'm an economist, and there's a whole group of economists, American Association of Wine Economists, and they have done thousands of tastings. And what they've found is that price is not a good predictor of what you're going to like.
No. That's correct.
In other words, yeah. That's correct.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I find that there are some of the greatest wines on our shelves can be priced anywhere from $12, $15 to $25. Mm. And that as you ascend in price, that doesn't mean that your experience will equal
Very
that ascension.
Yeah, I think with one exception, everything we have here in front of us is $20 or less.
All right, Elliot, thanks for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Peter Barrett is here, and the At Cook blog is on Instagram. The podcast is called Cook Pod, right?
Yes, that's right.
Michael Drapkin is here from Kingston Wine Company. We tried a delicious sparkling, sort of semi-sparkling, I guess, from the Finger Lakes.
Yeah, fizzy, frothy.
I love
Effervescent.
That.
Frothy, yes.
And our second choice is, for today, Peter.
Well, I'll let Michael break it down for you. But if Elliot's still listening, this wine that we're about to talk about, when we opened it and tasted it just prior to air, the first thing I thought of was a big plate of oysters. And so often, if you have a sip of something that you haven't tried before, you sit with it for a minute and see what it makes you want to eat.
Right. Most things I drink make me want to eat a Big Mac, but yeah. I think that's just me.
Well,
all right, let's
burgers
see.
Are good, man.
So this is the 2018 Col Tamari Col Fondo Prosecco. So going back to natural wines, this is a natural wine from northern Italy. Again, it has that slightly frothy, fizzy texture as the first wine. Col fondo means essentially in Italian, all of the stuff at the bottom. This is Prosecco as it was made, which is a sparkling wine from northern Italy, northeastern Italy. This is Prosecco as it was made the turn of the 19th century. So they're fermenting the wine, they're not filtering it, they're not fining it, they're putting it in the bottle with all of the good gook from fermentation.
It's very tart.
It is. It's tart. It's got a sour beer-like quality to
yeah.
it.
Yeah, a little lemony.
And
yeah.
then they're letting it re-ferment in the bottle with some of the grape must. And you can tell the color is a deeper orange hue. That's because they let the skins macerate. And I yeah. wish your callers could see this. It's a beautiful, almost.
Well, they can if they're watching on the webcam.
Oh,
I think.
Okay. Goldenish hue.
Yeah.
And they achieve that through maceration, the skins and the juice, which is a time honored technique.
Is that where the tartness comes from?
That's where the tartness comes in, but also, most likely, because there's still active yeast in there, the acidity levels are high because they don't push ripeness of the grapes.
Yeah.
So it is a very vigorous, electric kind of feel on the mouth.
So I would slam this down with a pepperoni pizza.
Yeah. Totally.
At 10% alcohol, which it is, you can and feel pretty good about it, yeah. and not semi-comatose.
This is the kind of wine that, it's true. This yeah. is the kind of wine that another friend of mine named Mike likes to say. It comes in a glass.
All right, let's take a call here, and then we'll maybe get an email. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Joseph in Saugerties is next. Joseph.
Yes, hi. How are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I make wine. I make homemade wine. I use oak barrels. And my question to your experts is, in preparing the barrels for the wine, how did you guarantee that they're clean of all contamination? I don't use any chemicals. Just wondered if you could give me some. And also, after you've racked the wine and you're going to put your barrel away, how do you preserve it for the next year?
Well, let me start by saying that neither one of us is a wine maker. I do a lot of fermentation at home, but it's okay. We've both visited a lot of cellars and I think we know a little bit about the process. I would say that if you're keeping everything super clean during the making, after you pour the wine off, I know winemakers who just almost they give it a rinse and then they close it up tightly. And just let it sit until the next year. Then they rinse it again. I know some who actually will spray a little brandy on the inside and briefly light it. And then put the bung in tightly and let it sit until it's time for the spring rinsing, or the, sorry, the fall rinsing. But if you're not using any, have you had any problems with wine that comes out tasting, you know, like vinegar or in some tainted in some other way? Or has it been okay so far?
Well, in the past years, I would have problems with that. And what I've begun doing is when I'm finished racking off my barrel, I'll add, depending on the size of the bottle, an inexpensive vodka to it to keep all the bacteria,
sure.
to kill all the bacteria. And then I rinse it just before I'm going to use it. And as long as the barrel smells good, I feel comfortable with it.
But yeah.
I was looking for a little more...
Yeah, I think you would need to talk to some winemakers for more info than
right. We might get some calling in here, so keep listening, Joseph. Thanks for the call. Peter Barrett is here. Michael Drapkin is here. We talk wine on Food Friday. This email came in from Brian, and Brian writes, and we touched on this a little while ago, I read somewhere that for similar wines, labels and prices can play a role psychologically in how a wine tastes. How much truth is there to this? And generally, for example, how could you tell which wine is better, a $15 bottle or a $35 bottle?
There's definitely a, let's call it a sort of placebo effect,
yeah.
I think. If somebody knows that you spent $200 on something, they will almost certainly, especially if it's something they haven't had before, I think
yeah.
people will tend to think it's better. For me, very briefly, for me, when you're actually getting what you pay for, which is not a given, a more expensive wine will have more information in it. It will be more detailed. It will have more layers. It will make my eyes widen in surprise and delight, and it will last longer on the palate. And it will evolve. Even just one sip will change as my experience of tasting it goes
on. I find
on.
That with port and some good whiskeys for sure. And I guess it's the same way with wine.
Well, and Michael's, he can talk about the retail side of it because that's his business. So.
Yeah, and I think that certain wines provoke an emotion or a feeling or have a particularly strong personality to them and that speak to, you know, kind of your subjective taste preferences. And I think instead of focusing on what the pundits say, maybe what, you know, the scores are or the rating of a wine, trust yourself, befriend a local wine merchant, and start to open corks, because that's the best way truly to know what types of wines you prefer and what types of wines you know would like to dismiss.
Yeah. And it can be an expensive education.
It can be, but you know, as Peter was saying, all the wines in front of us are, you know, approximately $17 to $20.
Yeah.
So if you did that once a week and that was within your budget, you know, all of these wines are made carefully in a human scale,
yeah.
by real farmers, farming organically, making kind of low intervention products. You know, I think it's in the grand picture of expenses, it's pretty approachable.
Yeah, you're getting a handmade product. This isn't cookie cutter industrial. We will, to answer this email further, in another couple bottles, we'll get to something that's a little more expensive.
All right, before we take the next call, we better go to another glass
right,
here.
So
we won't make it through the show.
Right, let's dump the Prosecco
and hang in there. We'll be getting back to the phones in a moment. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. And now the last one we had was a Prosecco, right?
The last one we had is a Prosecco.
Natural, old style.
Old style.
And where was that from?
That's from northern Italy, north of Venice. So in the Veneto region in northeastern
Italy. Very nice.
Italy.
Yeah. Okay. And this one is?
So this one is from the other side of Italy, from the Piemonte region, which is in northwest Italy, close to Provence.
Mm-hmm.
This is made, it's called Vino Semplicemente,
yeah.
which translates to essentially just wine, nodding to the fact that there is nothing added in this wine.
Okay.
It's a white wine made with several indigenous varieties made by the late Stefano Bellotti, who was a pioneer in natural winemaking in the mid-1980s, was farming biodynamically at a time when you were doing that, you were looked at as...
Crazy.
Crazy.
Why were they looked at?
Well, it was a revolutionary idea to turn your back against...
The industrial model of spraying and additives, which guaranteed more stability and better performance from a quantity point of view.
Is there more variability then from year to year?
Absolutely. Yeah. Because, as I was saying earlier, these wines are truly alive. They don't suppress nature. They don't suppress the bacteria and active ingredients in the grapes and during fermentation. So certainly there's some idiosyncratic elements to these wines. Now, this year, Vino Simplicimenti tastes one way. Next year, it will taste differently, again, because they allow nature to express itself through lack of intervention. So
this is a very interesting wine.
Yeah, and that's the unique thing about natural wines. There's a kaleidoscope of aromas and flavors that you do not get in conventional wines that make up 99% of the market.
This is interesting. When I first took a sip, I said, "Oh, very, very sweet." But it's not. It's deceptively not. It's not as sweet as I thought it was.
It's more that it has this incredible kind of floral perfume.
Yeah,
which makes you think it's sweet, even though it's not.
Exactly.
And it has a texture that's unique, again, because the winemaker is allowing the wine to kind of just fully express itself and go through its natural motions, which takes time. And in a economy of commodity products, most wines and winemakers and wine owners don't have the time to allow the process to see itself through.
It's a different model. It's a model of pushing as many cases out the door as quickly as possible.
I think this one is a winner.
Yeah.
And who knows what the next year would bring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what's the name again?
Semplicemente Vino.
I like that.
Yes, made by the late Stefano Bellotti, who passed away this year, who is an icon.
Who's taking over?
Luckily, he's got kids. Excuse me. He's got kids willing to continue on the farm.
Do they have the skill and the knowledge and the drive?
Hopefully, he passed on some of that to them.
Okay.
And I believe he has.
Let's go back to the phones. Michael Drapkin is here from Kingston Wine Company. Peter Barrett, who is a food writer and a blogger and now a podcaster, very fancy. Let's go over
so
to
fancy.
Dean in Ticonderoga. Dean.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
Good.
Oh, can you turn that radio down a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll wait.
We can turn it off.
That's great.
There we go.
You're on.
So, we've been debating starting a small vineyard up here in the northern part of Lake George.
You should do it.
And thank you. And I was wondering if you had any thoughts on what type of grape would be for this climate. I was thinking more of a white wine than a red wine. I've had some wines. There was a good local wine maker up here some years ago, and his white wines are really good.
Mm.
The red wines, not so much. So.
I have some input here.
Anything?
So I recently tasted and stock in the shop a wine from Wild Arc. They're located in the Hudson River region. They make a wine with the Marquette grape variety. And in fact, it's a red grape variety that was grown just outside of, I believe, about 30 miles west of Albany, in this general area. He makes it in the Hudson River region. It is a light, fresh, kind of highly kind of chillable summer type of red. So the Marquette grape variety seems to work very well up here.
Now, that would, of course, be a little south of where Dean is.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he might be more closely climatically to the Finger Lakes.
That's what I was going to suggest. If you haven't,
we're north of the Finger Lakes, probably 100 miles, and we're right on the Vermont New York border.
Yeah, yeah.
Lake Champlain, there's Lake George. I've noticed that Vermont has some vineyards that have really caught on lately.
Deirdre Heekin and La Garagista is making some really interesting wines in Vermont. I would definitely go visit her, and I would, if you haven't, would take a trip to the Finger Lakes and see, because you're near a large body of water, you're going to have a milder climate than the more mountainous areas around
you.
And so you might be able to pull off
a little bay that's sheltered, and we are classically 5 to 6 degrees warmer here than 3 miles away.
Yeah, so you might be able to pull off a more tender variety. It really would come down to talking to some winemakers in your area.
And they talk about terroir, but what about soil and such up there?
It matters a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you may end up, if you really want to get started, you might want to try planting a few rows of a few different things and seeing over time which ones perform best, and then you can rip out the others and do that. Or go for a field blend where you try a whole bunch of stuff and just let them fight it out, and that's your wine.
And to chime in with what Peter was saying, visiting winemakers in the area with climates that are relatively similar, tasting their wines is a really wonderful way to see what may work. And winemakers and wine growers are incredibly liberal with the information that they like
very
to share.
Generous people.
Very generous people. They love collaborating, and the philosophy of the water rises, we all rise with it.
So there's really not an element of competition there?
Of course.
I mean, he'll be pretty close to Vermont.
There is competition, but I can bet you if you walk into La Garagista, which is a wonderful natural winemaker in Vermont, and talk to them about great varieties that could work in that particular climate, they would be happy to share with you.
Well, we'll take a quick break here. Michael Drapkin is here. Peter Barrett, we talk wine. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Peter Barrett is here. Michael Drapkin is here. We talk wine on Food Friday. And again, the number is 800-348-2551. Before we taste the next one, let's take another call here. And we go to Cordelia in Windham. Cordelia, you're on.
Hello, how are you?
Hi, good.
Hi, I'm just calling. My brother-in-law actually told me to listen in, and I own a small wine bar in upstate New York, and we have a weekly tasting that we call Wine School, which we have over 105 sold-out weeks where we have a different theme. We've tasted over 650 different. Thank you, 650 different wines to date. But I'd say the most special part is that everyone leaves, you know, feeling a little more confident about what they learn about wine and how to pair it with food, and that we make it fun and approachable. We even have, you know, dress-up themes like Tour de France. We all wear berets. We had a rosé night. We all wore pink. So it's just fun when you make it understandable, because it's probably one of the most intimidating topics in the world.
That's very interesting, the intimidation factor. Do you have a lot of customers who, when they first walk in, they have severe performance anxiety when they order wine?
It's not marriage. It's just
no,
just wine.
Because luckily, having, you know, being a sommelier, I think a lot of people tend to bite their tongue if they're more of a wine snob to their friends. With me, they tend,
we don't like
they
wine
tend
snobs.
To respect the title. So, but it's definitely a challenge to deal with that more difficult guest that thinks they know everything about wine.
Yeah.
And of course, everyone should know what they love and own it. And more importantly, when you dislike a wine, if you're there giving it a try, that's 100% in your favor for at least trying it.
Oh, learning what you don't like is every bit as important as learning what you like. There's no question about that.
Yes. Well, Cordelia, thank you for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. This email came in from Libby in Broad Auburn. Thanks for the show on natural and organic wines. I'd like to know if the wines have a similar or very different storage life than more conventional wines. If it's different, can you explain why and how best to store these wines in general?
So, yes, in terms of storage, since these wines are living products and have not been, say, sterilized, you should store them at cooler temperatures. If you have a place in your home that's under 70 degrees, that is ideal. You can go above that, but it's not recommended.
So this studio is killing these wines, basically.
Yeah, they're fine. They're open for drinking.
It's 70.
Yeah.
If you have a basement.
This is for short-term, short-term storage. Long-term storage, just a basement, that doesn't have great fluctuations.
Yeah.
These wines can last for decades.
All right.
Some of them can.
Yeah.
And you had said something very interesting in the last break, that one of these wines, I think the one we're about to taste, you have a bottle open for 5 days.
Yes. So
why?
Well, for experimentation to see with the exposure to oxygen how the wine evolves and changes. Particularly these living wines, they're like a roller coaster. So when you open them up, you taste something, you smell something, a particular dimension. In 30 minutes, it can be different.
Yeah.
In 6 hours, in 24, 48 hours. And so seeing that evolution of something that is continuing to develop is a really fun dimension of these wines.
Yeah. All right, what are we tasting now?
So right now we're tasting a 2015 Sebastian Riffaut Sancerre. So Sancerre is a region in the Loire Valley. It's made, white Sancerre is made with a grape variety called Sauvignon Blanc. This is called, the cuvée name is called Osquenis, which means gold. And if your customers, listeners are looking in, they can see the gold color of this wine. So this is a Sancerre made very differently from all others. Most Sancerres are kind of picked underripe, fermented quickly again with, sulfites and whatnot. This producer, Sebastian, chooses to have his grapes ripen extensively on the grapevine, so much so that the wines suffer from something called noble rot or botrytis, which gives the skins a golden hue.
Yeah.
So combine that with long aging in barrel, plus minimal sulfites and additives, you get this richly textured, golden, kind of multi-flavored expression of the Sauvignon Blanc grape. He is doing something that 99.8% of other producers in the region aren't doing. And he certainly is an outcast.
Is he? They hate him? They don't invite him to dinner parties?
I would probably say that he's got some quiet dinner parties with some comrades from other areas.
Very interesting.
Yes. He's definitely a contrarian.
But so, this is a beautiful thing. It's definitely got a slightly nutty, slightly oxidative, getting into sort of sherry territory beforehand.
That's a good point. When I first took a whiff, I thought, okay, whiskey. But no, it's cognac that it reminds me of. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the first sip I take reminds me of cognac.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's that's extensive barrel aging for 24 months, exposure to oxygen, ripeness of grapes, gives you that kind of like heady richness that you find in distilled grapes, cognac and Bar Armagnac, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Not my favorite of the three, by far, and yet that's the one that is the priciest, yeah?
Yeah, it's about $38 retail, I think.
It is the priciest. A number of reasons for that. It is definitely, of the bunch we brought, the most idiosyncratic and polarizing. 2 out of 10 people will adore this wine.
I couldn't think of a food that this would go with.
Foie gras.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, some kind of foie gras terrine on crusty bread with a little... some kind of jam.
I would think you'd have to have something with a fairly strong flavor to match up with this.
Absolutely. And I think kind of Asian-inspired dishes could work.
Oh, that's not a bad idea.
Sushi, this would kill with sushi.
It's got that kind of umami thing going on, and to echo that with some Asian-inspired meals would be great.
Is this strong, alcohol-wise?
This definitely has a headiness and a richness to it, and for sure.
13, I think it says.
Okay. It's higher than many of the others.
One of the benefits from my point of view, because I'm not as interested in getting hammered as I was 20 years ago, is that a lot of the wild strains of yeast tend to die at a lower alcohol level than the commercial strains, which are bred to ferment alcohol. So you'll have a lot of natural wine that kind of tops out at 12, 12.5, 13%.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
Nothing whatsoever, because like we said before, you can have a few glasses and still be steady on your feet and feel good the next morning.
Let's take another call here, 800-348-2551. It's Food Friday. We talk wine with Peter Barrett and Michael Drapkin. And let's go to Judy in Valencia. Hello, Judy.
Hey, Ray. What's up?
Hi.
This is so great. You led into my question. It's sort of a segue. I have a question about alcoholic content. I think I'm one of those few people that looks at the bottle and tries to find out what the alcoholic content is. I've been doing this for years, and it seems to me that gradually over, let's say, the last 10 or 20 years, alcoholic content of almost every wine has gone up quite a bit. And I wonder, I have asked everybody I can think of, and nobody gives me what seems to be a reasonable answer. Can you enlighten me?
Okay.
My take on that very briefly is that the wine critic Robert Parker, who rapidly around the turn of the millennium, a little before that, became the most influential wine critic in this country, and this country buys more wine than more or less the rest of the world put together. We certainly import it from elsewhere in massive quantities. His taste, because he was so influential, his taste really deformed the market for the better part of a generation. His taste was for really big, really dark, really alcoholic, dense wines, many of which were made in a very adulterated series of processes. And
interesting, because I had heard that.
And so places like California, which benefits from a huge amount of sunshine and they're able to ripen their fruit as fully as they want to, answered that call and started putting out, you know, Syrahs that were 16% alcohol, which is just insane.
Oh, yeah.
And it crushes food and it makes you really drunk, and I do not endorse that level of alcohol. So that's my take on it.
And the pendulum naturally is swinging back.
Yes.
So thankfully, to a more balanced approach. So I would say, you know, for you, also look towards cooler climate regions, because generally speaking, wines that hail from cooler climates tend not to ripen as much, or I should say the grapes tend not to ripen as much, and therefore don't achieve that ripeness and alcohol level.
Well, that's interesting, because I actually learned to drink wine when I was living in Italy many, many years ago, and all the wines were like Undici, were 11% or 11.5%. You know, they were local wines, but they were lovely, and you could continue drinking them through the meal. And as you say, if you're drinking a wine that's 14 or 14.5%, forget it. One glass, and you got to stop.
Yeah,
or maybe
so,
two.
So I'm glad, I'm really encouraged to hear that things are going back to a better place.
Absolutely.
Well,
we
Judy,
are too.
Thank you very much for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Guys, we only got about 6 minutes left. Yeah. We have three wines to taste and calls to take.
We do. I have one quick comment just on the heels of my Robert Parker comment. I would be remiss if I didn't plug our friend Alice Firing's book that comes out next month. She is absolutely the most influential American writer on the subject of natural wine and has been for a very long time.
What's the name of the book?
The new book is called Natural Wine for the People.
Okay.
Comes out next month. I was privileged to take a glance at a PDF of it recently.
Yeah.
And if you want the one-stop shopping entryway, sort of golden key to this world, I cannot recommend her work. She's written a lot of books, but this upcoming one is a terrific primer on the subject.
All right, Peter Barrett, let's pour a glass and let's take a call at the same time. While you're doing that, let's go to Carmen in his car. Where are you calling from, Carmen?
From my car.
Okay. Well, that's vague enough.
I'm actually in Albany.
All right, you're
I'm
on, man.
In
go,
Albany, so.
Go ahead.
Yeah, this might be a little bit different. I have a favorite drink, and I know it's made from wine, and I was wondering if your experts there could talk a little bit about grappa.
I love grappa. I mean, it's a byproduct. It's made from the skins. It's made from the skins, the must, that are a byproduct of winemaking. And so they re-ferment and distill the grape skins. I love it. It's a wonderful brandy, and it's one of my favorites because grapes, in general, grapes contain more varied and detailed kinds of flavors than pretty much any other fruit, which is why wine is much more interesting, say, made from grapes than it is made from, you know, cherries or strawberries. There aren't many fruits that
Well, I have a favorite brand, and I was wondering if you could recommend one.
I have to confess that I can't, because I do most of my grappa drinking in Italy.
Okay.
And most of that stuff doesn't see these shores. I don't know if Michael... Not really.
You know, I would say there's a range of really interesting grappas coming out of Piedmont. Particularly, look for grappas made with the grape variety Moscato, because that grape variety is incredibly aromatic. So when made into a grappa, you get these beautiful floral aromas that you may not get in grappas that are made with kind of more non-aromatic grape variety. So ask your merchant for a grappa, if they have it, made with a more aromatic grape variety such as Moscato.
Okay. This wine that you poured is extremely interesting.
So this is a rosé from the Burgenland region of Austria, which is located south of Vienna.
This is like no rosé I've ever had in my life.
And it looks like no rosé you've ever had. You can check out my Instagram, at Kingston Wine Co. Recently, I posted a picture with an Overlook Mountain in the backdrop just to highlight the color of this wine. It's beautiful. It's a blend of indigenous grape varieties from the region. The skins and the juice macerate for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
It's made by the Kopich family, a husband and wife team. And so you get this really dark, almost kind of pomegranate-y hue to it. It's absolutely
There's a little
beautiful.
Bitterness, almost tartness.
It's almost like a light red wine instead of a rosé. You could call it a full-bodied rosé or a light red.
It's hard to classify this.
It is, and it falls into this really nice category that I think speaks to a lot of different people. It's my favorite schnitzel wine.
Yeah, I was just going to say fried chicken.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Oh, now we're talking. You guys ought to bring food next time. Let's go to Kate in Montague. Kate, you're on.
Hi. I just wanted to tell you about a project that I've been doing since 2003, and it's a wine journal that I've been keeping, a scrapbook.
Yeah.
And every time I have a bottle of wine, I take the label off. Generally, you heat it up in the oven and it'll come off.
Yeah.
And so then I paste the wine label in and I write down what I think about the wine. I write who's been to the dinner party. I write what we've had at the dinner party. And I probably have 200 labels now from 2003.
Oh, terrific. Good for you.
Congratulations. A whole lot of fun, and I highly recommend it.
It's like a stamp collection.
We had an earlier caller, and I was going to recommend people do just that. Take notes. If you don't feel like scrapbooking it, just take a picture, make a photo folder, or just post on Instagram for your own benefit. There are lots of ways of keeping a database of your preferences.
And we only have a minute here. Okay. Go ahead.
The last wine is from Chile. And it's made with an indigenous grape variety that's been ignored for decades. It's called País. And there's a wonderful article to chime in what Peter said about Alice firing. There's a wonderful article that she did about the resurgence of the indigenous wines coming out of Chile. So instead of Cabernet Sauvignon or Sauvignon Blanc, you have this grape that has been in the region for over 400 years that now again is getting some attention. So it's a lighter red.
Is this the one we're drinking?
That's the one we're drinking.
I love this.
It deserves a little bit of a chill. It's got this extraordinary white pepperiness to it. As you can tell, it's unfined. It's unfiltered. These are wines that, you know, the locals have been drinking for a long time, but have not got attention on the international market.
Well, you saved the best for last. Yeah.
I think so too.
This is your summer jam for barbecues.
And it's a liter bottle. It stretches a little further. Everybody needs an extra glass.
You know what, guys? We didn't even get through everything we needed to get through today, but you did very well. We'll have you both back soon. Support comes from Troy Waterfront Farmers Market, outdoor market with over 100 local farms and food vendors every Saturday 9 to 2 on River Street with live music and children's activities, troymarket.org. Del Mar Farmers Market, featuring local and organic farm products, baked goods, and fair trade crafts every Saturday from 9 to 1 at 332 Kenwood Avenue, delmarmarket.org. At Field Goods, fresh produce, eggs, meat, dairy, small batch creations, and more from local farms and food entrepreneurs delivered to workplace and community locations, field-goods.com. Thanks again to Peter Barrett and Michael Drapkin for being with us today. Thank you for listening. Terrific calls, terrific emails. Zach Malloy. Zach is shaking his head. It's been a long week, Zach. It's almost over, my friend. Barb King took the calls. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Thanks for being with us all week on Vox Pop. We will be back on Monday with a Medical Monday. Enjoy your weekend. Stand by for the best of our knowledge.